There was a fake out.
No kidding. It's like, wait a minute, what just happened? It worked.
It's that Fish and Frank's radio show. Fish and Frank and Robert and RJ and all those other folks just like that, only different.
Something similar.
Oh, something similar, only different. And it's, oh, well. Another show to be done today about, okay, quiet, all right, shh, I'm grabbing the wrong knob and turning it down. I don't know why I was doing that. You don't turn it down with that one, you turn it down with t'other one.
Right.
And when you got t'other one, you got to have the, you know, I don't know. Well, anyway, Fish and Frank here, Robert and Chair across from me, and RJ conspicuously missing today. I think he's probably doing some of that legal stuff, you know.
Probably.
So, anyway, fishing out there, sheephead is a big in the news, snappers, grunts, jacks, black drum, bass, crappie, all kinds of good stuff. I guess let's just start with the sheephead, because sheephead's kind of like the, you know, when they took snook and redfish out, and they said you're not allowed to keep them, and that was kind of a big deal, because that's a dinner plate fish for a lot of people.
Right.
You know, it's a big catch and release fish, but it's also a big dinner plate fish.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, redfish is considered a good eating fish, and snook's considered a good eating fish, even though both of them, not that many years ago, were considered garbage fish that were of no value to anybody.
A soap fish and what, a carp?
Yeah, the redfish was considered a saltwater carp that was just not good for anything, and guys would just try to kill them to get them out of the water so they could get to the good fish. And nowadays, it's considered premier game fish. I think the redfish shirts actually outsold the tarpon, sharks, and
absolutely
snook.
Yes, it did.
And that's the first time that's ever happened. Everybody's always been kind of shark, tarpon, snook, and now all of a sudden redfish is just taking over.
Yeah. Well, you think about it. I mean, 20 years ago when we first started going to the shows, it was always trout, trout, trout. And then redfish caught on, what, 15 years ago with a lot of different tournaments and everything else. Next thing you know,
well,
all these
the black and redfish craze. That went crazy across the country. Everybody was serving it. Everybody had to have it. The restaurants were all begging for it. And it pretty much wiped out. You know how everybody thinks of the good old days? And we'll get to the fishing report in just a second. But everybody always talks about the good old days. Well, I can remember good old days that really sucked. You go out here, fish for a month, and maybe find a redfish.
Right.
And that was back in the early 90s, and not that many years ago. I mean, old by, you know, young people's standards, but for us old folks, it was just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was no redfish around, and so they made them endangered, and you weren't allowed to keep any for 2 or 3 years. And then they used to be, when snook was open, redfish was closed.
Right.
And then they finally ended up doing one per day with the slot limit thing on them. And it was like that. They opened it up all year. Which I really think if they went back to when snook is open, reds is closed, that would be, you know, a pretty good thing. That would give people more of a focus around a little bit, you know?
Yeah. No, it would definitely ease the pressure off of some of the other fish. Because, I mean, look at how many people target snook when it's out of season. And then redfish, when they're plentiful, they start targeting those. But if you make it more accessible on both sides of it, I think, yeah, you'd absolutely have more people targeting them.
You could also go a few months, you know, like basically trout, snook, and redfish. You could say, okay, snook's open for 2 months. Now it's 2 months of trout. Now it's 2 months of redfish. You could literally roll around the calendar that way.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a possibility there.
Yeah. There's a lot of things could be done. But anyway, right now, I think that's one of the reasons this year sheephead has become such a big target fish, is because it's a good dinner plate fish.
Yeah, I'll buy some of that. I mean, every year it's a very, very targetable fish. But, you know, traditionally speaking, in December, January, and February, it's blooming cold. It's usually blowing 100 miles an hour. Usually the only two fish that are usually cooperating anyhow are usually trout and sheep's head. So they're really targeted a lot harder this time of year than the rest of the year, let's say. Because they can catch them both from a pier and a boat. So they, you know, they get really... We see a lot more pressure on them this time of year, usually.
What happened to the guys fishing for whiting?
The whiting kind of fizzled out on the river. That was a big part of it. Well, actually, I take that back. I think it fizzled out a little bit. You know, we saw a little bit of it die off when they put that pipe across 75 and changed some of the bottom topography. That killed it for like a year.
Well, they ran a big 3-4 foot water pipe from the Port Charlotte side across the river over to the Punta Gorda side, so Charlotte County could sell Punta Gorda water.
Right.
And now they're even planning on selling more to Fort Myers.
Yeah, Fort Myers and Cape Coral. Yeah.
So anyway,
I think that changed some of the topography of the bottom, which kind of hindered some of the travel of those fish. But I think the other part of it is, honestly, as sad as it is to say, I think some of those guys just passed away.
I don't think they really brought on other people into it, because young people now think whiting's a bait, and it's actually a very good food fish.
Absolutely.
So anyway, back to, tell me where the sheephead are.
The really, really good numbers are all along the intercoastal, the passes, any of the jetties, and basically anywhere where there's structure along the whole ICW, whether it's the mangroves or oyster bars, mouths of the creeks. I mean, just about everywhere they're finding them down there along the ICW.
So, if you're going to have a drive to spot Placida or...
I would say my... top three picks would be Placida along the trestle there on both north side and south side, the Anger Pier in Inglewood, and then the Venice jetties up in Venice. Those would be my top three picks.
Drive two spots with the car.
Yep.
Okay. Prime baits.
Me personally, I like frozen shrimp. That's my number one choice for sheep's head. Number two would be fiddler crabs.
All right. Now, I was really, really happy to find out. We found a new source for fiddler crabs, and we've had them in pretty steady, and we've got a nice steady supply. Been a couple little hiccups with it, but we are selling farm-raised fiddler crabs.
Which is pretty awesome.
Because going out and getting fiddler crabs in the wild, what ends up is you end up out of fiddler crabs.
Yeah.
They don't multiply fast enough to keep up to the demand.
Right.
So... I don't sell wild shiners for freshwater because I'm vehemently against that. Because I have watched the guys come through with their pickup trucks and cast nets and wipe us out of wild shiners so they can go sell them at Okeechobee and all these other lakes. And then we're sitting here with no wild bait.
Right.
Where you should be able to go out here and...
No natural forage fish for our foods, for our species that live right here.
So... They take away our forage fish, you know, the bass and all that should be eating, wipe them out, and we're left with nothing. Right. And they do that all around the state. They're going every county, city by city, county by county, around the state constantly, looking for more wild shiners to supply this demand for the lakes.
Right.
We sell them farm-raised shiners. That's what I'm going to sell. I'm not selling wild shiners. I don't like the rape and pillage of it. I mean... Go over, you know, they should be able to get a permit to fence off part of a lake and grow the shiners there.
Right. Absolutely.
And just feed them and grow them. I mean, they're not really any different than the domestic shiners. They're very slight difference. The only difference is, being wild, they have a better aerobics program. They have to run from predators all the time.
Right. And they know how to run.
They're a little stronger. They didn't grow up in a lake. They grew up in a lake, but being chased around. So they have to move all the time. Anyway, but with sheephead, we're buying farm-raised fiddler crabs, which is awesome. And I talked to them about maybe they're going to try and start farm-raising sand fleas.
Which will be very cool.
Because sand fleas is actually a natural bait for them.
Oh, yeah, it's fiddler a completely crabs natural food source.
Is not actually a natural bait for most fish.
Right, that's true. You know, fiddler crabs are primarily terrestrial, which means they live on land. They don't venture off into the water very often, and if they do, it's only an inch of water. You know, if they happen to fall off of a tree limb when they're crawling up that down into a little bit deeper water, yeah, that's it, but that's not their normal area to be in, is deeper water. But because they are a crab, they're still a crab. Doesn't matter what they look like, big claw, little claw, no claw. It's a food source for those sheep's head, and because they're readily available, you know, people don't realize all things are born small. When those sheep's head are down there feeding on the barnacles and the piling, you know, around the pilings or oyster bars, they're eating the little tiny baby crabs of all species, whether it's a stone crab,
rock crab, black crab, spider crab, you name it.
Any kind of crab. Little baby shrimp, they're eating the little tube worms or feather dusters that are growing around those barnacles. They are eating every little possible crustacean critter that they can get their mouths on.
And they're not actually eating what most people would think as a barnacle. People think a barnacle is that hard shell thing.
Right.
And what the sheephead do is they bite into that. Their teeth can crush that. But they're spitting out all the hard parts, and they're just eating the little soft worm in the inside. It would be like a human coming up, chewing on an oyster, and spitting out the shell just to get the inside out of it.
Better description.
Go ahead.
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Peanuts are sunflowers.
That's true.
You chew the shell off, spit that out, and eat the fruit that's on the inside.
And that's what sheephead do with the oyster, or barnacles, rather, because that's what they're looking for, is that little soft, gooey worm on the inside.
Absolutely.
But anyway, we're constantly looking to better the bait and keep everything sustainable. And believe it or not, wild-caught stuff is not... Farmery stuff is the way to go, because you're not destroying nature so we can have fun.
In most instances. You know, this is definitely one of those items where it's doing far less damage to the environment by farm raising them than it is to go out and take them out of the wild. So it's actually very, very impressive that they're being successful at it.
Right. So how do you rig up for the sheephead, Robert? What's your favorite rig? And because a lot of people hear about freelining. Is freelining something? Well, actually, how do you just describe freelining? What is it? And is it something you can use for sheephead?
Not so much for sheep's head. You know, freelining basically amounts to your main fishing line, your leader either tied on with a swivel or a line-to-line knot, and then your hook, and then your bait. No weight, no bobber, no nothing. Just literally the weight of the bait is pretty much all it is, and you're casting it out there and letting it drift around as naturally as possible, or in some instances, even retrieving it at a very slow speed, letting it try to swim around and look as natural as possible without anything hindering its motions. But for sheep's head, because they're usually so much around structure, which usually structure creates pinch points, which can create more stronger currents, it's a little harder to do with free lining for sheep's head. You know, even on an oyster bar that's only in 2 feet of water, water's coming in and we're going out, but it has to push around and over those oyster beds.
So you're likely to get snagged up and lose your rig. You're gonna get broken off.
So it's easier to control it with where it sits or stays when you cast it with some kind of weight on it.
Well, here's my thing. What's your favorite rig for sheephead?
Honestly, it depends. Let's say I'm standing on a shore, because that's what I do a lot.
Well, let's say standing on a pier.
Yeah, standing on a pier.
But there's going to be a difference between shore and pier.
True.
Okay, standing on a pier.
Standing on the pier, honestly, I would prefer to use a porgy rig, where my sinker is on the bottom, and about 6 inches to a foot above that is my hook coming off to the side with about a 6-inch leader.
So they're called porgy rigs, chicken rigs, double drop rigs, single drop rigs, where you tie your line to the rig at the top, the sinker's all the way at the bottom, and the hooks are tied off in the middle.
Correct.
Now, why do you want that one on the pier?
Because I have a little bit better control with that sinker being on the bottom, knowing that my hook is coming straight off of that. So where I'm holding my sinker or my main fishing line at, That sinker's not moving very far, but I know my leader is sticking out about 6 inches to a foot, so I can kind of control it closer to the piling.
Now I get where you're doing the control, because I couldn't figure out what the control was about. But what you want to be able to do is, sheephead are not exactly bottom feeders, and they don't really feed on the top. They like going up and down the columns, the pilings, or around oyster beds and stuff, and they eat, you know, in front of them, right mm-hmm. there.
Right.
So if your bait's down on the bottom, they got to go to the bottom to get it. And they will, but they would actually prefer it right there by the column.
Absolutely.
Right by the piling.
Yeah, that's what they're most familiarized with looking at.
Yeah, not really bottom, not really top, somewhere in the middle. And that's what kind of rig can actually do that. The reason this rig will work is because the sinker's in the bottom, you're tied to the top of it, your bait's trailing out, you put it up current from the piling so the bait trails back to the piling.
Correct.
You never want to go on the bottom side of the pier where the tide would be taking the baits away from the piling. You always want to be on the upside of the tide so the current, when you drop your sinker down, usually actually a little heavier weight than normal because you don't want it dragging across the bottom right up into the piling. You want it to be able to stay back a little bit.
Yeah. If I know that my line is coming straight down off of my rod tip, I know that within 2 inches or so off of my rod tip, that sinker is straight below that. So therefore, I can control, like, okay, I've got a foot-long leader. There's my line going into the water. The line looks like it's about 14 inches off. Okay, I need to back up and pull my rod tip in 2 more inches so I know that my bait is right up against that piling where they're going to most likely be.
Okay, now you say shrimp. You putting a whole shrimp on, just a live shrimp?
No, I use pieces. I like using the frozen shrimp. You know, our shrimp that we have in our Ziploc bags are our fresh dead. So they've only been, in some instances, not even frozen yet. And in other instances, they've only been at least frozen once.
They haven't been sitting on a loading dock and maybe thawing. Because a lot of the shrimp and sell, we don't know how many times they were actually thawed out and frozen. Because they're not food, so they don't have to be handled properly.
Right.
And sometimes you open up the bag and it just looks like a bunch of mush in there.
Right. And then other times it's absolutely perfect.
And they actually cost less than the ones that we bag.
I don't like rolling the dice.
Yeah, the ones that we bag actually are like 50 or 75 cents more than the ones that we buy and sell. But they're a lot better quality bait.
Now, absolutely.
Do you just do the pieces on? I got the thing. I like to peel the shell off.
That's what I like to do. I like, especially standing on a pier, you have your wood railing on around you, so I actually like to take the peel the shell off the shrimp, and then I do that with a couple, two or three of them, and I'll set them on the railing. Now, and I don't know if you taught me this or if Jeff came up with this idea, but one of you, because you guys both talk about so much, I save the shell, but I'll let the shrimp dry out for just a couple of minutes on the railing.
So it's definitely Jeff Calkins.
Well, not that part. The actual, I'll take the shrimp once it's dried out just a little bit and rubberized. I'll take a piece about the size of my thumbnail, and then I will put it on the hook, but then I'll take a piece of the shell and put it in front of that. So it almost acts like a little bit of a stopper to help keep it from getting pulled off as quick and easy.
That's definitely Jeff, because all I do is I peel the shell off, then I start at the thin part of the shrimp and put it over the point of the hook and thread it all the way on, so the thick part of the shrimp and the point of the hook are in the same place. And the narrow part of the tail, I let it go all the way up, and I use the tail to cover the eye of the hook. I don't take the tail off when I peel it. Okay. Kind of like if you were at a party where they have shrimp, you're going to dip shrimp it in cocktail. Something to eat it.
Yeah.
So you still have the actual tail of the shrimp on there. And then I go from that end first, and that way that tail actually hides the eye of the hook.
Right.
And then it goes all the way down. Now, Jeff always just takes pieces, puts them on, then he takes a little bit of the shell, puts it on as a keeper, so it's very hard for the fish to rip it off.
Right. Yeah, see, I've always done the pieces, but I didn't do the shell before. And that just, it was plausible, so I stuck with it. You know, but letting it dry out for the couple of minutes always makes me feel a little bit better, because it's just a little bit more sticky, a little bit more rubbery. It stays on that hook just a tiny bit longer.
So you start off with one fresh just so you can get fishing, and while you're fishing, you leave the other ones up there to dry out just a little bit, get a little bit rubbery.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
and then the other one that works extremely well is fish bites. I'll either use that by itself or I'll use that in conjunction with the piece of shrimp.
Like put a piece of frozen shrimp on, just a piece of shrimp meat on there. And now I usually put the fish bites on first.
I do too.
That way when they steal that soft shrimp meat out of there, they try and come back for the fish bites and okay, I got them.
Yep, exactly. And you taught me that, so that's what I do. And it's worked out very, very, very well. So it's made it very enjoyable for me.
Right.
And improved my catch ratio, to be honest.
We're going to do a side thing here. Where are the jacks going around now? Have you heard any good stories of jacks? And I'm going to come back to the sheephead rigs.
The jacks have been really predominantly in the PGI canals, but I have heard of a couple of schools that have been on again, off again on the east side, just on the outside of the bar. But they're hit or miss. You just happen to come across them. But the ones in the PGI canals have been really good to consistent in the Colony Point Canal, Bass Inlet Canal, and the Rim Canal going towards the bird section up inside Ponce.
Right.
Some guys have been catching some pretty good ones, like up to 12, 15 pounds. Some of those ones have been on the east side, though, a couple of those schools of fish. I mean, a guy showed me a picture of one. He had a legitimate 18, 20-pound jack that he caught. And he said they were all like that in the school.
Well, the one thing that's happening is it's becoming harder and harder to make a living commercial fishing.
Yes.
And there's less and less people doing it. And less people putting nets to jack revel. And with that happening, we're seeing bigger schools. Now, the jacks have also figured out that if they stay in some of the canals, they don't get netted.
Right.
They can live there unmolested. So they go outside and they, boom, people are throwing nets on them. Everything else happens. So they're really figuring out that if they stay in those canals, they're going to survive better.
Yeah.
So anyway, jacks, I would say my number one lure, if I was going to go trolling, be a Storm Twitch stick. If I was casting for them, a small spoon.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. I like trolling that Rapala X10.
Oh, you like the X10 Rapala?
Yeah, I like that 10 size for some reason. The Twitch stick is in there with the group because I'm never trolling just one. I usually have one off to the side and then one straight out the back in the prop wash when I go through the canals. And one's going to be the Rapala 10 series. The other one's going to be a Twitch stick because they're two different sizes and two completely different colors.
Two different actions.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's a much tighter action on the Rapala.
Yeah, and I don't troll spoons anymore because they twist my line out.
Yeah, even with a ball bearing swivel, I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I get too much line twist, and I can't get the twist out of the braid. With mono, it was easy. I could drag it behind the boat, 2-3 minutes, a brand new line again.
Right.
But with the braided line, you can drag this stuff a half an hour, and it's still twisted.
Yeah.
It doesn't come undone, and that's expensive line to mess up trolling a spoon, so I'm pretty much not trolling spoons anymore.
Yeah.
One of the things, though, going back to the sheephead for a minute, we're using a porgy, chicken rig, whatever, double drop, where we're tied to the bottom, sinker tied to the top, sinker on the bottom, lines coming out the side. And it's funny, I get guys that they're going to fish from land, shoreline, not a pier, but shore, and they're casting out with the double drop because they want to hook on the bottom and hook on the top. And I kind of ask them, I say, really? Now, what's to stop this from both of them just laying on the bottom?
Nothing.
It does. It just lays flat on the bottom. If you use a chicken rig, a porgy rig, you know, you got your sinker on the bottom, you're tied to the top. As you even pull it, you're dragging it sideways. But it's got a hook which made out of metal, even if the whole thing's made out of monofilament. And a lot of them are made out of steel. Steel's just going to fall to the bottom. Whether it's a hook, a steel leader, whatever that's made out of. Only one way those rigs will work when you're casting them away from you, and that is to put a little heavier sinker than you normally would on there. It's like if you normally use that 1/2 ounce, go up to 1 ounce, and then find a small bobber that sinker will drag right to the bottom, but the sinker will float that rig up for you, or the bobber will float that rig up for you. So the sinker drags the bobber all the way underwater until the sinker hits bottom. The bobber floats your hook, your baits, up off the bottom. So you get that one close to the bottom and one up in the middle. if you're not putting a little float on the top of it, the whole thing's laying on the bottom, guys. I got news for you. It doesn't, just because you hold it and you're holding it upright, doesn't mean it's going to be that way when it hits the water. For some reason, people will pick those up and go, well, I need this because it's going to go off fish. I say, are you dropping it straight down and holding it? No, I cast it out there. I said, what makes you think that that's going to stand up?
No, I don't understand that either.
I don't get how that even becomes a thing. It's going to fall to the bottom. The whole thing's heavier than the water.
Right.
So no matter what, even if you got a current, it's just going to go to the side, but it's not going to float up. You need a float at the top. So you want to figure a bobber slash float that is small enough that the sinker can pull it down, but just big enough that it will float the rig upright.
Yep.
And that's how that's going to work.
No, it makes perfect sense. And that way you're a little higher up off the bottom in the water column, so the fish are more prone to see it. And you're probably going to feel the bite just a little bit better because you're a little bit more in direct contact versus that metal laying on the bottom. They pick it up. They feel that little bit of weight in their mouth, maybe.
No, but it just gives you one that's very close to the bottom and one that's up off the bottom. So okay. You're getting two types of feeders off of that,
right?
I would say, because I don't know if it's going to be better or worse for feeling the fish, because you know your line's going up to it, the bobber's up. But the only thing I know 100% certain that it is a fact is if you throw a double drop rig out, pour your rig, chicken rig, and you cast it away from you, if you don't have something to float the top of it up, it's going to be laying on the bottom.
Sits right on the bottom, yeah.
The only way it stays upright is if you're standing immediately over it on a pier, dropping it straight down. Other than that, you need a float or something to keep it up.
Absolutely. So,
and I do fish free line for sheephead every once in a while because I don't, even when I'm casting around, if I get a very slow moving current, or especially around a dock, and they're right down below where I am, I will let out a little bit of line off of my rod so it's, you know, going down towards the water, and then holding it in my hand. I'm not actually even casting it. I'm just dropping it.
Okay.
And that shrimp acts like a little bit. It slows it down like a little parachute. As it's trying to go down the water, that shrimp just drifts down very, very slowly. And as it's falling, that's when I can get the sheephead to pick it up a lot of times.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I don't know actually casting it out if it would be any better or worse, but a lot of times sitting over right over the top where I can see sheephead in the water, I will let out quite a bit of line, get just a little bit up the current, and just drop it so that that piece of peeled shrimp meat or fiddler crab would just very slowly drift towards the bottom.
Okay.
And I've gotten a lot of fish that way. And you would think, well, you could see them. Well, if you present that very slowly, just dropping it down with no weights, no bobbers, a lot of times, you know, and it's kind of drifting towards the bottom.
Right. I could see that working extremely well under low current situations.
So I don't think there's a rig that doesn't work, but there are rigs you actually have to think about how you're going to use it.
How it will work in that situation.
Exactly. That's what I'm looking for. What is the presentation value of it? Not all rigs do the same thing under all circumstances.
Right.
Porgy rigs, chicken rigs, grouper fishing, exceptionally well. Speaking of that, how's the snapper and grouper bite out there?
Oh, that's been incredible. The snapper bite has. From 3 to 15 miles out, the snapper, grunts, and porgies have been unbelievable. The grouper bite's been decent, but you got to go out 80 to 100 feet of water depending on which pass you're coming out of.
Now, I was talking to Gant the other day, and he was telling me they were out in 120 feet. Nothing came back in 100, nothing came back in 80, started getting some nice fish.
Yep, exactly. And that's what I've been kind of hearing from a lot of different people. And we're talking red grouper in the 24 to 30 inch range. So some pretty good quality fish. But really that's about it. You know, they're catching a whole lot of lane snapper way out there, but you can catch those lane snapper in at 15 miles and catch the same quality fish at 1.5 to 2.5 pounders. So it's plenty
60 good. Feet of water right now, 60 to 80 feet is where I'm hearing about a ton of yellowtails out there.
Yeah.
yellowtail snappers. Guy had a picture of a pork fish, P-O-R-K.
They're cool looking. They're a really pretty fish. They're almost like an aquarium fish.
And I forgot what it was. He was asking me, what is this? And I got Austin. Austin said, no, that's a pork fish.
Yeah.
And because it kind of looks like a lane snapper, kind of looks like a French grunt, kind of looks like this, kind of looks like that. But it's a pork fish, P-O-R-K.
Yeah. They're very pretty.
Just like the meat you get on a hog, pork. But. You know, I was sitting there and I saw all of a sudden it dawned on me I need to watch what I'm doing, because reading those Winston Churchill quotes, you know, if you're going to describe something, it should be like a woman's skirt, long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest.
Right. Like it.
It's like, man.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. So.
Now I have a question for you about the sheep's head, because we get a lot of people that ask us, what would be your size and type of hook that you would want to use? Or using the shrimp or the fiddler crabs?
For me, fiddler crabs, it's a number 4 to number 2 gold mustad hook. It's just a standard J hook. If you're going to use the circle hooks on the fiddler crabs, it's got to be like a 1 or a 1/0, because otherwise there's not enough room to even get to where you can hook the crab.
Right. Their carapace is too big to try to get in that gap between the point and the shank.
So it's really tough to get a fiddler crab on the circle hook. With the J hook, I can come in between the legs, go straight up alongside the shell and out through the upper corner without really having to go up inside of the fiddler crab itself. And I've hooked them sideways. So fiddler crabs, they'll crawl straight backwards, but a lot of times they do like crawling sideways. It's easier for them to maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
They're faster because of the way the legs bend.
Right.
So, you know, it's that to me is the best way to hook them.
I agree with you on that.
Now, if I'm doing frozen shrimp, an offset circle isn't bad, but I'm trying to thread the shrimp onto the hook. So, again, the circle hook is really tough to get the bait onto.
Right.
If I'm using a live shrimp, it's easy because I can just take the circle hook and go under the head or through the tail and hook them up with a circle hook, no problem. But to me, a J hook is a lot easier to thread shrimp on, the pieces on. Offset isn't bad because the point's going out to the side, but then you're kind of like a J hook.
Yeah, exactly.
And a standard circle is almost impossible to get a bait threaded onto.
Yeah, especially that size. You know, because you are dealing with smaller circle hooks.
With J hooks, I'm into the number 2, number 4 because they got a smaller mouth. Now, I did have some customers that kind of proved me wrong for the way they were fishing. They were doing the same thing with 3-0 and 4-0 hooks and just, I mean, fish after fish they were bringing in. Same numbers as I was, but they used the bigger hook.
4 times a bigger hook.
Yeah, the hook was literally 4 times larger than the one I was using, and they did great with it. So my recommendation is a smaller hook that definitely fits in the fish's mouth where they can get a good hook set on it. But with those guys, I mean, but they were jamming the hooks home. They were setting those hooks.
You'd have to.
And I'm not sure that wasn't, you know, and with sheephead, I don't know if it makes a difference, snag or unsnag, but
right.
It was like as soon as they felt the bite, they just jerked up and they were hooking those fish.
That would have been pretty neat to watch.
It was kind of cool. It was out at Placida on the trestle, out there fishing, you know, trying to keep my skills up, and a couple guys from Englewood were doing that. And
nice. See, and there's a couple customers that come in here that swear by jig heads on them. And me personally, the only time I catch sheep's head on jig head is by complete accident. I've never been able to really target sheep's head with a jig head. On a reef, on an oyster bar, in the creeks, I've caught them all on jig heads. But it's dumb luck, literally complete accident.
Well, because of the way people are using jig heads nowadays, we actually put the jig heads in the terminal room.
Yeah.
It's another form of hook in today's,
absolutely.
The way people fish today, they're using jig heads as hooks, not as, I would say almost more than they're using them for the plastic tails and all the rest of the stuff.
For natural bait more than anything else.
It's amazing. So we've actually now have jig heads in with the hooks and swivels and sinkers as terminal tackle rather than in the lure section where traditionally that's where I would have thought they belonged. But in the last few years, I've had to redefine what I think of as terminal tackle versus what I think of as artificial lures.
Right. No, there's no doubt about it. And with all the different sizes of hooks that some of these companies are doing, I think they're taking a liking to customers using them as for both natural bait and artificials.
Well, of course they are. They're selling more.
Well, but they've paid attention to it enough where they've started putting like a 1/0 or a 2/0 hook or a 3/0
hook. Wait a minute. Outside of Rockport Rattler, who do you know doing that?
Well, you got two different sizes in the DOA.
Now, DOA, like long shank, Mark Nichols is way smarter than the rest. He's got the big long shanks and he's got the short shank ones. Mm-hmm. And my favorite one's that short shank DOA.
Right.
But outside of Rockport Rattler, not many people have 1/0, 2/0, 3/0, 4/0.
True. That's true.
You but get you a are different sizes of,
you're at least
different
seeing,
weights have different size hooks on them.
Right. But some of them jump up extremely. Like, you know, you go like a 16th, an 8th, and a 1/4 ounce, it's this size hook, and then it jumps up 3/8 to a 1/2 ounce jig head. It's like 3 times a bigger hook on some of those jig head companies.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. So it's nice to at least have a couple different options out there of some of those hooks.
All right. What's the freshwater for just a second? What is this weather doing with the bass fishing and the crappie fishing?
The crappie fishing, believe it or not, in the local canals have been still doing pretty good, even though it's warm. You know, there's been quite a few guys catching them, you know, in the 9 Mile Canal, the Northport Canals, even out there in Rotunda, some of the Inglewood Canals. I've heard of a couple guys fishing some of the ponds up in Venice and some of the gated communities and catching some. You know, it's kind of all over the map, but guys are
Cecil Webb, a lot of people going out to the Webb for them, and it was real good for a little while, and then it kind of thinned out a little bit.
Yeah.
But Prairie Creek, Shell Creek, historically really good, but right now kind of a zero.
Yeah. Even Okeechobee's been horrible this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they dropped the water so far, it's really hard to find them.
It's 2 to 4 feet low. I was talking to Wayne Quick the other day, and he was telling me how bad it is over there as far as the crappie fishing. The guys are really struggling. A couple guys have been finding some of the crappie in the shallow waters rather than out in the typical deep spots along the edge of the main canal system or ICW going
well,
through.
Well, yeah, the main waterway channel there.
Right. There's been a couple guys actually finding some decent fish. They're moving a lot because it's not great groups of fish, but decent enough fish basically up in that 2 to 3 feet of water along some of the buggy whips and the cattails.
Okay, bass fishing, how's the weather? Now, this week, we're going to have a couple of cloudy days and cold temperatures.
Yep.
So, this can drop our water
a bit.
Because without the sunshine, it doesn't heat up during the day.
Right.
As long as we have cloud cover, cold nights, and cloudy days, that's going to get that water temperature down. Is that going to bring on the bass? Now, I've heard of bass pre-spawn, like in some of the Punta Gorda ponds and canals and stuff like that, whereas up a little further north, or I'm sorry, the other way, a little further north of us, they're in pre-spawn, like farther up Northport, Sarasota area, and down here, the bass are already on the beds.
Yeah, and some of the canals, they are already on the beds. Some of those canals off of, by Kings, or not Kings Highway, Veterans and Peachland.
Peachland Veterans.
A couple of those canal systems, guys are already seeing some fish sitting on beds behind their houses. Had a couple guys seeing them down there in TGA, Tropical Gulf Acres, also on beds. But some of your bigger fish, you know, up more towards Venice, Northport, you're just seeing the males cruising around, and some of the bigger females are definitely feeding pretty heavily on the shiners. So I think right there, definitely you nailed it with being pre-spawn kind of in the Sarasota County, but some pre-spawn and post-spawn.
This is some of the largest numbers of shiners we've ever sold.
Oh, my gosh.
Shiners are not a big money maker for us. We carry them because we're one of the last places to have shiners and minnows.
Yeah.
But in the last 2 or 3 weeks, the last month, let's say, shiners have really gone crazy. We got guys fishing them freshwater where there's you expect it, but we now we got a lot of guys fishing them saltwater because they can't get the saltwater bait fish.
All right, pinfish have been so hard to find that they're kind of substituting it a little.
And especially up on the river, Sansuchi, areas like that, Shell Creek Dam, up by the Navigator. But a lot of shiners going out. Minnows are going off the chain. So crappie fishing's got to be good right now with all the minnows out there.
Yeah. The only problem is I haven't seen Teddy at all.
He was in. I saw him once this year.
I saw him once about a month and a half ago, and that was the last time I saw him. Which is a little, that's a lot odd.
Disconcerting on crappie season. When you don't see Teddy around, you're kind of wondering what's going on. We're selling tons and tons of minnows, so we know the guys are crappie fishing.
Right.
And they got to be catching a lot because the amount of minnows we're selling, the crappie fishing's got to be great somewhere.
Yeah.
But I think you have a better chance dating their wife than you do getting where they catch crappie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They don't give those spots up at all.
No, they're not going to talk about it. So, as a lot of the country is experiencing a little warmer weather, and so obviously, you know, the global warming's kicked in, and we're all going to die in a few years, but...
maybe a day or two.
Yeah, in a day or two. I keep saying I'm the biggest fan of global warming there is, because without global warming, I wouldn't have been born.
Right.
Because I was born in Illinois. Right. And if you're born up north, anywhere Illinois or north, if you're Canadian... You gotta love global warming, or there'd be 2 miles of ice on your where you were born. You'd never be born there.
It wouldn't exist.
Global warming's been going on for 10,000 years since the last ice age.
Right.
So, but a lot of weather patterns changing right now. We're getting a lot of fronts going through. The southeast has had one of the wettest years on record. Georgia is just getting inundated with rain. But now down here in South Florida, we're kind of right on track for almost everything. Our water temperatures are close to normal.
Pretty close, yeah.
Everything's kind of going good. And I just don't see anything bad going on down here. How's the snook bite doing?
A lot of peanut snook everywhere. Little guys. I mean, the east wall's ate up with a lot of small fish. But it seems like the bigger fish have moved in for the most part into the canal systems. You know, PGI, Port Charlotte. Starting to get a few more reports up the river again this past week, so.
Well, I think people are just fishing for them.
Mm-hmm.
And fishing the river is a different thing for snook than fishing the canals or especially the flats. Up on the river, they're going up there so they can stay warm for the winter.
Right.
And so they're going to be in those deep cuts, real deep cuts. When a river goes around a bend, the outside of the bend is always going to be deeper than the inside of the bend.
Yes.
Because when water goes down the river, it's together. Those same water molecules that enter the curve have to exit the curve exactly the same. And so the ones on the inside are going much slower than the ones all the way around on the outside. The outside is traveling a lot faster, and that digs the outside of that bend out, making it deeper. On the inside, when the water's going slower, it tends to drop sediment out of the water. It's acting, as it goes slower, it can't carry the particles with it. So the inside gets shallow, the outside gets deep. And that's where you're going to find those snook. Now, I like taking rattle traps. They fall about 2 foot a second. And I'll throw maybe a jig first to kind of get an idea how deep it is. And then I'm throwing rattle traps up against that bank. And when I see the splash, I'm counting to at least 5 before I start to reel in. Because most of those are 8, 10, 12-foot cuts on those riverbanks.
Right.
So I want that lure to fall almost down to the bottom, and then I just start bringing in as slow as I can with still getting it to rattle a little bit. And that really, for me, that's been one of the best ways. I like that bleeding bait one up there.
Yeah, that's one of my more favorite colors.
Yeah, that one really does good up the river.
Bleeding shiner.
Yeah, and I use that in the black and chartreuse. I like those two up there and the crawdad. For some reason or another, anything with orange on it really seems to get a snook's attention from the 41 bridge up.
Pretty weird how that works, isn't it?
That orange is amazing on snook. Yeah. We troll those, cast them by the bumpers. And when nothing else is working, that orange crawdad-looking rattle traps just blast the snook. And I would have never bet on that. I would have bet against it, as a matter of fact.
Absolutely.
But
there's no question about that.
We are actually pre-recording the show. This is a pre-recorded show today because while you're listening to this, we are at the Charlotte County Boat Show. We're going to be giving seminars every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're going to have seminars going almost all day. We got a lot of different captains. I'm going to be there doing a lot of the seminars this year. We've got a little bit of tackle. We've got some specials on some stuff. But we're going to be at Charlotte County Boat Show. I was looking around. There was one really cool little boat there I saw. I really liked it. It was like a shallow skiff, one of those Texas boats.
Okay.
But it was only 14 and a half feet long.
Oh, geez.
But when you're looking at these boats and they look like they'd really run skinny because they're just little and there's nothing to them, go around the back and look for something like, say, this one had a water pressure thing for the speedometer, right? And you're going to look where the depth finder's hooked up to it. You're going to look at those things to see where this boat is probably going to travel in the water and measure down from there to the bottom of the skeg.
Yeah.
And when you start measuring down, you start looking and going, now wait a minute, with this I put a line across and I went, okay, that's got to be at least a 10-12 inch before I can get up on plane.
Right.
It's not going to be an 8 inch boat.
No.
It's going to be 10 to 16 inches, 10 to 18 inches before I can jump this thing. It's not super skinny. Sometimes when something's really small, there's no displacement.
Right.
And you take a 24-foot Carolina skiff or a pontoon boat that has a like a 24-foot or whatever.
Right.
It's just going to take off going straight. It's not going to lift the nose to run. You just put the motor all the way down, ease the throttle up, and off you go. But when you have some of these little skiffs like that, they're small. They don't have a lot of displacement. There's not enough surface area pressing down on the water, so they sink more. And I'm looking at some of this going, wait a minute. My boat's 24 foot, comfortable as hell. I'm going to run in less than this thing is. You know?
Yeah.
So when you're looking
at... It looks cool, but then the reality sets in.
That's it. There's a perception of what a boat will do versus what the boat actually does. And really look close at where they mount the, you know, transducer for the depth finder. You know, that's going to tell you about where the water line is going to be. They're not going to put it too far under. It's going to be right kind of where the boat's going to run in the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good tell for me how much water the boat actually drafts.
Right.
And on used boats, look for a watermark.
Oh, yeah.
And if it doesn't have a watermark on it, it's because they scrubbed it and scrubbed it and scrubbed it to get that watermark off. And chances are there was a reason they got it off, because it's drafting way more than what they're going to tell you it is.
Yeah.
You know, if a boat really runs skinny, they'd probably leave a little bit of that watermark there just to go, oh, look, it only drafts this much water. But yeah, if they've scrubbed and scrubbed to get that watermark off a used boat, it's because you can take a tape measure and go, okay, that thing sits in 16 inches of water. You know, little things like that, that you can kind of go to figure out what a boat will do. And when you're looking at the front of the boat, there's chines that go along. And now these help control the direction of the boat, and they also help control where the boat splashes water. If the chines are kind of beveled so that when the boat goes down on a wave and it splashes up, where is it going to hit that? Is it going to come all the way up and blow back in the boat, or is it going to turn it back down towards the water? If they're angled down, that's, as the boat moves forward, it's going to be trying to push that nose up, because the water's going to be hitting it. It's going to try and lift that boat up, help you get on plane. If they're angled so that it splashes up, and it's a simple matter, just start at the bottom, run your hand up, and when you feel a chine, just kind of come off of it and see where the angle is. If it's throwing that water back down at the water, it's going to be a much drier boat than if when you run your hand off, it's coming up at an angle. If it's going down at an angle, that's going to lift the boat out of the water, give you a drier ride. Right. If it's going up, it's going to be a wetter ride, and it's not going to get on plane as good.
Exactly. And so, with, and a perfect example, that is like days like yesterday. Yesterday started off super slick calm, but around 2 o'clock that breeze started to really rev up, so you might have had a good time going out, but coming back you probably would have got wet if those chines were pointed upward.
Oh yeah. Yeah, every boat I've ever been on runs great on a perfect day.
Yeah, a piece of plywood runs good on a calm day.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Put a motor in a piece of plywood, you run the heck out of it.
Exactly.
But when it gets a little rough, that's when you can tell what's going on. And boats, flat bottom boats, skiffs types, the bigger they are, the better they ride. The smaller they are, the worse they ride.
Yeah.
And you get those people say, well, I didn't want too big a boat because I didn't want it to be, you know, I wanted it to be a little more. And 16, 18 foot skiffs, flat bottom, beat the snot out of you. But you take a 24, it's hard to bounce that thing up and down. It's a lot easier to make it go smoother.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Here's a quick question for you. Mono versus steel leader. What's the difference?
Well, this time of year with the water clarity the way it is, if I'm fishing during the daytime, I'm 100% using a monofilament leader with the exception...
Or fluorocarbon.
Yeah, mono or fluorocarbon with the exception of if I'm targeting sharks or Spanish mackerel. But if I'm just broad spectrum fishing, I'm going to use mono or fluorocarbon because the water's just too clear. I want whatever edge I can get to better my chances of hooking that fish.
So you're using the monofluorocarbon so that you're going to get more hits.
Absolutely.
Maybe not more fish into the boat, but actually more fish to bite the hook because they can't see the leader.
Right. They're not as prone to... They let their guard down, I guess. They're not looking at all that hardware going, wait a minute, I've seen this. That's not right. You know, and in the case of like you using a natural bait, free lining or something like that, you get a much more natural presentation with your mono or fluorocarbon than you do with steel.
Because it doesn't really, it's not a big floater or sinker. It can kind of just be in the water more. It's not trying to float. It's not really trying to sink.
Right.
It's going to sink very slowly.
Right.
Where steel leader really wants to go to the bottom.
It's a sinker. It's a long, skinny sinker.
Yeah, a long, skinny sinker. And now fish will hit on steel leaders.
Absolutely.
You can catch fish with steel leaders. It's a myth that you don't, that they won't bite steel leaders. They're a fish. They're slightly smarter than a rock.
Right.
But what's happening here is that what we're trying to do is get the most bites, the most activity. If you're worried about just landing the fish, getting them to the boat, the steel leader will work. You're going to catch less fish, hook less fish during the day, but when you got them, you pretty much got them.
Right.
That's kind of the difference between the monofilament, fluorocarbon, or steel, is you're not going to get as many bites with the steel leader because it's a lot of stuff in the water. But the fish will still bite it. They will still hit it. The snook will eat it, redfish, trout. They'll all hit on a steel leader one time or another. But more of them will hit the sneakier you are.
Right. Absolutely.
So that's kind of your difference. If you really want to just, every time you hook a fish, you want to know you're getting them into the boat or have the best chance of getting them into the boat, that would be the steel leader.
Yes.
But if you're looking for more activity, more fun, more fish on the line, that's the fluorocarbon monofilament.
Right. And you should still be using the leader just because you need it for that abrasion resistance. You can't just run your braid straight to your hook or just your monofilament straight to your hook because everything down here is teeth, barnacles, or oysters. So it cuts, scrapes, shreds, tears up your line, and you want that all that abrasion resistance you can get.
Well, I'm going to go with that, but I think if you were using monofilament, you're probably using 10 or 12 pound test, and the fish are going to chew through that so quickly, you'll get a lot of them on the line, but you probably won't land many of them.
Right.
Where with the braided, I think you're going to get less fish because it's like using a steel leader. They can see that braided line no matter what color it is, no matter what you do to it, they're going to see that. So using braided to your hook is kind of like using a steel leader, where you're just not going to get that many hits off of it.
Right.
You still get hits. You probably land the fish, but you're going to get less.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we got about a minute. Any last thoughts?
No, I hope everyone enjoyed their Christmas and their New Year. You know, I know we briefly talked about Christmas, but now we've gone into the New Year and everyone's had that. So hope everyone starts it off great and keeps it going in a good forward motion and catches lots of fish.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that would be a cool thing if everybody just kind of got happy. Come out to the Charlotte County Boat Show. We're going to be out there this weekend, today, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, you know.
Yep.
So I guess it starts on the 10th.
Yes.
10th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. Whoa, that's a lot of loud guitar playing there. So, anyway, Fish and Frank here. That's Robert over there. And RJ conspicuously missing today. But he's in our thoughts. He's in our whatever. He's here in spirit, if not physically. So
exactly.
We'll see you later, guys. Bye-bye.